page turners, thank you for joining us, these four humble charcoal salesmen, as we wander around Taisho era Japan, learning how to fight demons. This is our first episode of our manga marathon. Welcome to Outside the Pages. As always, I am Poet Air, also known as Michael. That was real sweaty, guys. I thought that was going to be a lot better at the beginning.
No, it's okay.
It's all good.
Yeah, I think you did good. Good. And I'm your shonen sensation, Chaz Simons.
Premium.
Thank you. Yeah. And as always, we've got our hardest working member, sword swinging editor.
Konnichiwa. This is Synesthetic, aka Jack.
And then we have a very special guest today, Jack's little brother.
Yo.
You want to introduce yourself?
Yo, this is Alex, and I like manga, and so that's why I'm on.
We are so glad to have you, Alex. As big fans of manga ourselves and having a younger generation on here, that's awesome, especially because from what your brother told us, you're well-versed in many things in anime and manga, things that you should not know about, which we'll talk about off mic.
I don't know if we want to talk about that on
off mic.
I'm going to beep that. Don't worry.
Okay.
But our first.
I thought maybe you're talking about Berserk. That one.
Oh, dude, I watched Berserk when I was like 12 or something.
Oh, that'll fuck you up.
Yeah. Well, I had no idea what it was when I opened it. Actually, my dad got it for me because he said his friend said it was good. And then we watched
it. That seems like a dad thing.
And he was like, yeah. Holy shit, what is this? You shouldn't watch this. And then we just watched the whole thing.
Yeah. Let me just make sure. Maybe it gets better at the end.
It's like the same moment when someone reads ElfQuest to you, or you read ElfQuest as an adult, and you're like, kids should not be reading this. But
yeah. It looks so family friendly.
It looks so family friendly. It's really just about elf humping.
Like anime and manga in general, like always looks a lot more innocent than it is. Like you really can't tell if something's gonna be super fucking dark and fucked up until you actually start reading it.
Well, our first, so we're gonna do we thought it was gonna be a month, but we're actually gonna do pretty much till almost July, a manga run with also a lot of great interviews we are bringing you guys, and also some TKO coverage. So it's going to be a lot of stuff coming your way. Our first one that we're going to do with manga, though, is the book we're here to talk about today, and that is Demon Slayer, known in Japan as Kimetsu no Yaiba, which is written by and drawn by Koyoharu Gotoji. And I'm glad we picked this because I was out. I know Chaz likes it, but I was out in the manga loop for a long time, just in the comics. And my friend from California recommended Demon Slayer before the anime even came out. He was just telling me how good it was, and it sucked me back into manga completely. Now I'm buying all sorts of manga. I have the Viz manga app, and this story just blew me away. I think it has a lot of great morals. It has really compassionate lead characters. The good guys really have, you know, definitive characteristics that make them good, and they're willing to stand up for life and, you know, what it means to be human. And the bad guys are really bad. And like all bad guys, they kind of value superficial things like life more than being a decent person. And what's great about this story is most of them in the end kind of regret the people they've become and kind of miss their human lives, which I think is a lot of this story's strength in Demon Slayer. And we're going to talk about the whole series as a whole, is the fact it has like compassion even in its villains. But I've talked about it a lot online. I'm talking a little bit about it right now. What are your guys' thoughts on this? And then we'll get into it.
I just wanted to say real quick that you were talking about how the good guys are really good and have those good attributes, and you know, you can see them still having pure heart while they're slicing the shit out of some people. But and then the bad guys are really bad. And that's something I really enjoy and is like I find to be my favorite about bad guys, is bad guys like I was talking about this with like Orochimaru from Naruto, or like the Joker. I always say that, you know, the Joker is such a good bad guy because he just loves being evil and he's like not in denial of it at all. He's just like, fuck yeah, I'm going to be evil. I want to be immortal and just wreck shit. I don't care who dies. And that, oh, wait, no, sorry, that was Orochimaru. But the Joker,
similar situation.
I'm sure the Joker wants to be immortal too.
I'm sure, like, he would love to be immortal if he could.
Yeah, there's no part of him that isn't wishing to do that every day.
Oh, totally. Yeah, so I love bad guys that just love being evil and have no denial about the fact that they're evil. And that's what you find in Demon Slayer with the bad guys. They don't think that good. Like, those are the bad guys that piss you off, or the ones that think they're good.
Yeah, it's not that thing where the guy's deluded. Yeah, and he thinks he's doing the right thing, but he's doing the bad thing. These guys know for a fact they're in the wrong.
They do it anyway.
The one thing that you both failed to mention that I think also makes this book just kick all sorts of ass is the fights. The actual, like, fights between Demon Slayers and the demons, or even between the Demon Slayers and the Demon Slayers, like, they're so well drawn, they're so well, like, choreographed, and the abilities on display are so insane and look so radical. Like, it's wild. You do get those compassionate characters, but powerful as well. Not hesitant to
take out. We should have brought up the battles, because they're absolutely captivating. Like, the whole Mugen Train... You know, getting a little ahead. The whole Mugen Train battle, reading it before the movie came out, had me so on edge, not knowing what was going to happen, just because of how well the scene was executed and how much you began to care for this character, who really you only met not so long ago.
So I want to I was thinking it would be good to open up for anybody who doesn't know much about the Demon Slayer series. It kind of reminds me of vampires in the most Japanese anime way humanly possible, because they're not they're demons, they're not vampires, but they have a lot of the same rules and, like, you know, essence as, like, what you'd expect from a vampire.
Me and my wife were rewatching True Blood, and all I got reminded of the entire time in True Blood was how similar
so good and trashy to Demon Slayer. I just watched all of True Blood again this quarantine.
God, it's brutal.
It gets so bad in the end. The last two seasons are just
awful. I love it.
Unintentionally comedy.
If you want to enjoy
season two onward, it gets pretty fucking whack.
If you want to enjoy True Blood, you have to look at it as something you can laugh at.
When it really jumps the shark.
It's really good if you can laugh at it.
Absolutely jumps the shark, though, is in the last season is it the last? It might be the sixth season. Sixth or seventh season, they have the guy come on that's half fairy, half vampire. That's, like, obsessed with Sookie. And Warlow. And he find out that Sookie's dad wanted to murder her because she was a fairy. So that's why Warlow killed them. And then Sookie's father possesses Lafayette. And Lafayette is a possessed by an old white man for, like, half the season trying to kill Sookie. And that's just, like, how did that plot happen? Like,
I think the beginning of the end,
where they were like, we gotta get this.
Way in, like, season three or four, like, pretty early comparatively. I think that the methed out incest werepanther story arc when you could see that it was just gonna become a fucking snowball of trash.
Like, look at the brother doing well for himself. Oh no, now he's garbage tied up fire on a table and they're doing all sorts of stuff to him. They're gonna bite him over and over, like,
and do some other things to him with people he should not be doing them with.
It's nuts.
That show's gnarly.
What's even crazier in the books, last True Blood thing before this comes to True Blood podcast, in the books, my sister read all the books, Jason actually marries that girl Crystal. And he becomes a werepanther, because in the books, if you get bit, it's how you become a shifter or a werewolf. Like, Sam was bit in the books. He doesn't have some weird family with a brother. He was just bit as a kid by a shifter, and that's why he became a shifter. And the werepanther Crystal bites Jason when they get married, and then Jason has little werecubs with her, and he's a cop. He's a werepanther cop, and he's raising his kids. And then now I tell Alexis this, and she's just mad. She's like, why didn't they do that? And I'm like, well, that's because they introduced this hereditary thing for some reason in the story, because they wanted to give Sam a brother. So it just kind of offshot all the rest of their storylines.
And how are we going to suspend our disbelief that far? Like, you just get bit by one of these things in turn? Yeah, right. Vampires, maybe. Shifters, no way.
So I guess that the book series is way... Well, I guess that the book series and the TV show are both super trashy in different ways. Like, the book series is just way more stupid somehow and, like, ridiculous, but a lot less just, like, blatant sex all the time, like in the TV show.
So, note to self, never bother reading the books.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to Demon Slayer. Where were we?
Yeah. Welcome to Merlots.
Well, speaking of the character's compassion.
That pool table's seeing some shit.
right from the get-go, when we meet Tanjiro, he's filled with this like love for his family because they all live out in the fucking deep woods making charcoal, and they're just charcoal peddlers, him and the six brothers and sisters and the mom, because the dad is dead already. He was infirm, so he's had to be the man for a long time. That's how we know that he's a true shonen protagonist. He's been through a lot. He's had a lot of responsibility already, even at a young age.
I have a question about his age.
When he fights demons, he's too compassionate.
Yeah.
And it bugs me sometimes. But how old do you think he is?
Well, so reading online, I did like a whole research with the graph of how the story goes. It says that during Mugen Train, he's 14. And what that proposes is he has to be like 10 or 11 when the story starts. And I feel like, to me, when I started reading it, I thought he was like 15 then. But then he does 3 years of training before he even heads to the, you know, the Hashira compound.
Selection exam?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Before he does any of that. So that means he had to, I would assume, I'm guessing, he was 10. But he just seemed a lot older to me. So that always confused me when I was reading it. I love the series. It was just one thing that always kind of confused me was how old Tanjiro was when it began, because 10 seems a little bit young to be traveling to town selling charcoal in a world filled with demons that come out at night. But, you know, he's the man of the house. He's the oldest
brother. As long as you're not out after dark. Yeah.
This is anime. Or manga.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
So that's another vampire parallel, that they can't be out at night.
I was just going to say about how it's fine because as long as he's able to be out in the day and not at night.
That's very true.
I've seen that demons don't appear to be the only dangers of this world they live in, though. It's a very archaic world.
Well, it's in a real era.
We'll get into that.
Era.
Yeah. Yeah, there is some technology in some areas, but still very rural. Still, I think it's sort of the perfect setting for a story like this, because there is that...
Well, Taisho era is like the old west of Japan, which might make it easier for the listeners to understand. It's the same period that we had the old west in Japan.
There is a demon slayer who fucking dual wields sawed-off shotguns.
Hell yeah, man.
Hell yeah,
Genji. So there is some technology.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. That there's that like the beginnings of it.
I was like,
no, that's
fuck?
Rad as fuck.
Genya's a savage, dude. There's a battle in the end that's just literally so brutal. But anyway, as Chaz was introducing, he's a charcoal salesman. He goes out to get charcoal for his family. And then what happens after that? This is what kind of is the firework that sets off the entire series.
His poor, poor family is found dead.
He comes home. Yeah, he comes home from his charcoal day of selling charcoal. And little did he know, his entire family was slaughtered.
Technically his
sister managed to survive. Yes, his little sister.
Everybody,
Nezuko,
though.
Managed
the baby.
Even the baby,
survive,
which is,
so to speak.
They came across our lead villain, Muzan Kurosuji, who's basically the king of demons. All demons are bred from him, and he basically slaughters Tanjiro's family. And then, just like Terra from True Blood, there is one member that survived, but she has now become a demon.
Okay, why don't you guys just take this part?
All right, so Muzan has fled. He has committed this atrocious murder, and he has fled the scene. He's only sort of realized that there was somebody else there because Tanjiro has a nose for danger. And he has a literal nose for danger because he has super-duper smell ability. And we meet a lot of other demon slayers with, like, really enhanced senses that become, like, part of his crew, which is pretty rad, but... He's got a really good sense of smell, and he smells something evil has been there. And then he picks up on a faint sort of sound, something or other, and his sister is alive but ferociously trying to attack him. She's turned into a demon for reasons unknown to us at the moment. but she's trying to kill her older brother. And he is doing everything he can to not die and not kill her when this demon slayer comes along, ready to take her out because she's a demon now. And his battle against Giyu, Tanjiro's battle against Giyu, is what draws him into the larger world of demon slaying.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, I'd probably want to go fuck up some demons too, huh?
Yeah.
Or be just fucking terrified to do it. He's definitely a brave young man.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got nothing to lose.
His quest becomes curing his sister of the demon inside her, or the demon that she's become. Some way of saving her that nobody knows how to do. But maybe the demon slayers do, so Tanjiro's off to learn and to train.
And he goes to good old Uro Kodaki.
Yeah, the former water Hashira, right?
Yeah, and then Giyu's technically the water Hashira now, but there's a whole complicated plot with that later, so he doesn't recognize himself as one. But yeah, he gets sent to the former water Hashira, Uro Kodaki, and then he trains for 3 years, a lot of times fighting a boulder, trying to cut it in half, and he's helped out by two demon slayers, he thinks, that are constantly coming and helping him train. And that's kind of the offset of how he learns his balance. We later find out both these characters are ghosts, and they're trying to get Tanjiro to progress farther than they did, because they both did, unfortunately, die during the selection process.
Yep. A sad day. But after 3 years, he's finally determined he's ready to go. He's going to give it his all and spend, is it a whole night, right?
Yeah, it's a whole night.
Battling demons on the mountain. Trying to survive until the morning. Or is it longer? Did they have to survive like 2 weeks?
I think it's... I bet it's been a long time since we read that, but I believe it's just the... Or let's listen to Alex.
It was... I'm pretty sure it was a week. I'm pretty sure it was.
Yeah, because I remember there being like an element of like some people just hiding out for a whole week and not fighting.
Oh, yeah.
And then others, like a super rad dude that's got some anger problems, just fighting everything that he can.
Yeah, it's a week. Yeah.
So, yeah, they got to survive a whole week against demons on a fucking mountaintop.
Pretty brutal.
Yeah. And the best part of it is, if they survive, their reward is they get to spend their whole lives fighting demons. So, like... Good luck. It's a real
I guess it's an appropriate
X-Men cover, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, welcome to the Demon Slayers. Hope you survive the experience.
I mean, you get a job after.
That's true. And you get a dope ass sword.
I guess it's a pretty good job too, because a lot of people are trying to do it. Like,
yeah, but I mean, it's not that good. They don't get like mainstream respect.
No.
Like if you like I guess, like you just described it, Michael, it was like the Old West. So, like, the idea of people walking around with swords is essentially like a cowboy just holstered up, right? It's probably normal in some places. But even in that Mugen Train arc, it seems like they got to, like, hey, let's tuck these swords aside. We probably shouldn't get on this this train all fucking geared up.
Well, didn't they get chased by the cops for a second?
Yeah. Because they're wild.
The demon slayers kind of get like Witcher treatment.
Yeah. So a lot of kids enter, and like the Thunderdome, only few leave alive, and are rewarded with their own special sword, one imbued with properties of the sun from a special metal, much like that of Wakanda or a Marvel movie. But it's a Nirin? Nirin blade?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah. It's honed down by an individual swordsmith.
Wakanda forever.
Each demon slayer is basically assigned a swordsman to handle and create their weapon. And this sword's got a special property, this metal. The first time they draw it, it takes on some color or attribute, like a mood ring.
Which a mood ring
is pretty radical. Yeah, some get sweet designs, and some, like Tanjiro's, don't get a color at all. And it turns black as night, which is a ominous thing in Demon Slayer culture.
Technically, black is every color, so he got a whole lot of color.
Well, technically, later
absorbs every color.
It later becomes another color when combined with the sister's power, and when his breathing technique is revealed. Yeah. So like all these colors too, they kind of hint towards what the so you're gonna find out like the master demon slayers, they're called Hashiras, and they all specialize in a certain breathing technique, which there's water, sun, flame, sound, serpent, love, stone, wind, insect, mist. So I mean, there's a lot of them.
Flamboyance.
flamboyance is sound.
It is sound. You're right. I would be the pillar of flamboyance, though. I could rock that.
That'd be pretty cool, like Mick Jagger.
Maybe totally. We'll kick this off as a setup, and then we'll just talk about kind of our favorite story arcs. Because if we go piece by piece through this entire manga, we're going to be here for like a week.
205 chapters long, if you're reading it on the Viz app like I was. And it's awesome. The thing that I also really appreciate about Demon Slayer, and I can't believe it took me 30 minutes to say it, but like I really appreciate when stories end. And this one ends. There's a very clear beginning. There's a nice established goal. And he joins this big organization. They've got a goal. They work towards that goal. They complete that goal. And then the story is over. Like, we get the hint of something, and we got a prequel coming, and we got other things in the world of Demon Slayer. But I like that it's almost like Yu Yu Hakusho or something, where he was like, well, I'm all done. I don't want to do it forever. Like, this is cool. I'm ready for the next thing.
Favorite manga is like this, Hell's Paradise, Promised Neverland. All of them kind of started at the same time, and they all had clear endings, which was really nice because it was actually refreshing to know I was going to get a final chapter and not have to read this for the next 15 years of my life.
Yeah.
With like arcs that are not as satisfying. You know what I mean? Like when you have like, oh, that was cool, but like I had 20 chapter slog of like fucking bullshit talking arcs I want to see some cool fights.
Naruto manga, but I would recommend skipping huge gaps of it because a lot of it's just nonsense.
That's what I did with that anime.
Forever.
Is I just skipped literally like 50% of the Naruto and Naruto Shippuden.
It's the same in the manga. The manga is 75
I
want to
give
volumes.
It the animefillerlist.com, I think, was the website I used.
I think that's what I used to. I watched
skip every useless chapter.
I watched the filler before their wedding, and I watched the filler where Naruto, there's like a Naruto mech.
It's like
Robo Naruto, and then puts them on like an Iron Man suit, and then fights the Ninetales mech.
Well, that's kind of the problem with him, the creator, is he so clearly wants to write sci-fi, but he's doing a ninja novel, and he tries to like worse than Boruto, where he just keeps on trying to turn it into a sci-fi, even though it's clearly a ninja
like
story. But it gets to clones, and even in Boruto, it's just clones and alien city now, which is fine, but it's just But to give our listeners an example of this is 205 chapters. It's 23 tankobons. The original Naruto run, which the anime was adapted to Naruto and Naruto Shippuden, is 75 tankobons.
It is a lot.
Okay, so forewarning before we start digging into the arcs is that I have read about 3/4 of the story so far, and Alex is about halfway through, so we have not finished it yet.
And you guys don't have any spoilers.
The other thing is that there's going to be lots of spoilers. No, I'm fine with spoilers.
I already know a lot of the future stuff and the story that happens. So
yeah, this guy's on the anime TikTok or the manga TikToks. They spoil everything.
Favorite part of this series, though, what really drew me in is the Hashiras. Like, they just are kind of the heroes and stuff I always looked up to as a kid, especially Kaoru Rengoku, who's the Flame Hashira. He has such a powerful mark in the story, and it really helps, as Chaz was saying, this has a beginning, middle, and end. This is a very Campbellian story, a Joseph Campbell-like story, like Star Wars, because, like, Mugen Train is almost the Empire Strikes Back, I would say, of the series. Yeah. Like, it really sets
the hero's journey
off. Yeah, it really, mm-hmm. where, you know, there's some major things that happen, and it really sets off Tanjiro to grow as a person and kind of put him on his path, as we also learn more about him and his connection to the sun, because we're also dealing with reincarnation here. But I love the Hashiras. They all have little moments with Tanjiro. And Tanjiro has two good friends we haven't talked about much with his journey with Nezuko. And their names are Zenitsu and Inosuke. They're there. They're the crew. Zenitsu definitely
they're
has
the real ones.
Redeeming. They're the like real main trio with Nezuko and them.
They're awesome
characters.
In the manga and terrible in the anime, in my opinion.
Yeah, there are Hans. Like Zenitsu's are sleepy Han Solo, Inosuke's are Chewbacca, along with Nezuko, Leia, and Luke Skywalker, Tanjiro. And then, you know,
I don't know. I'd almost give Inosuke the Han Solo. He's got that swagger, man. He's got that confidence.
That's true. He does have that
but
confidence.
Also,
and
luckily,
he's gorgeous when he takes his boar head off.
Our Princess
Surprisingly,
Leia,
yeah.
And luckily, our Princess Leia and Luke Skywalker never have an awkward kiss. As far
no,
as
they know their they know their brother.
So they're very aware
awkward.
They're related.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really awesome when Zenitsu is like, I'll go forward a little bit in during the Mugen Train when he's just like Nezuko-chan and just like hopping over the river with
oh,
Nezuko
so
on his back and he's like,
yeah.
I love
his love
you,
for
Nezuko.
his love for Nezuko is very strong.
So when he chases the boy that invades his dream with those big scissors, that was my favorite. Like,
yes,
nobody comes between me and Nezuko. Like, even so,
Zenitsu's
big
like
thing is that he's only ever learned the one move. He's only ever learned the first form of breathing, but he learned it so good he could do it in his sleep. But he panics so hard facing down any demon that he has to do it in his sleep. So when he's knocked out, he's like way OP.
It goes unconscious.
And it's rad as fuck. Yeah.
In the moment, that seems awesome. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, one of the fights that I think was the best with him comes way at the end where he faces down another person who had been mentored by his grandfather. Yeah. And this was part that where he'd gone away and trained, he had gotten this news and it really affected him, and he disappears from the manga for a while, and then when he shows back up, he unleashes like this brand new form that's just like that, but it's so insanely powerful that like this black lightning shoots out everywhere, and it's so cool, and it was so rewarding, because the whole time I kept thinking like, man, is he ever going to learn how to do this awake? Like, he's got to at some point do it. And then when he finally does, it was like, oh, it was fucking cooler than I could have imagined.
Well,
thank
I can
you.
Imagine that if
thank
he does
you,
it
patience.
While he's awake, he has way more control over making it.
He's so
badass.
Savage at the end. Yeah, he's so savage
insane.
At the end. He wipes the floor with that cocky bastard that became a demon.
Even in the beginning, seeing him go from being like a sniveling little bastard to all of a sudden just like going complete fucking insane beast mode and murking the shit out of people is like pretty stellar.
When he fights that spider and keeps getting scared and keeps waking up and then he gets bit and is like passing out and fighting all crazy.
That was a pretty
that's actually where I was
battle,
gonna,
actually.
Yeah, that's where I was going to jump to. So the sake of time and sake of move to where the story starts really getting moving is the party is assembled. They're going on their way to the Hashira compound. They end up fighting all these spider demons, and that's also when, during it, Tanjiro remembers his father taught him a sun dance, or a flame dance, as he thinks at the time, called the Hinonami Kagura, and he's able to tap into that and defeat the spider demon, and then they end up at the Hashira compound and have a trial for Nezuko. They decide to let her live, and then that sets off to Mugen Train, and I think from Mugen Train on, it's going to be pretty easy flowing for us to talk about the story, because it kind of picks up. And it never lets go. If you have something else
I think
you want
that
to talk about,
we're breezing over a pretty huge plot point, though, of them having their trial for Nezuko when he meets up with the Hashira. I'm pronouncing it right?
Hashira,
yeah. So yeah. When they meet up with the Hashira, essentially they put Nezuko and Tanjiro on trial for the fact that he's keeping a demon alive, which goes pretty much against everything the demon hunters are about. And pretty much all the demon hunters kind of hate Tanjiro for this at this point. And the leader of the Hashira comes upon the decision to allow them to live on a trial basis. And I believe become a higher ranking member of the Demon Slayer organization if he manages to kill one of the upper moons. Was that what the agreement was?
No, because the reason he wants to kill an upper ranked demon is so he could get his blood for the doctor so that she can find a thing that will cure Nezuko. And Afura even. Yes. And that's Tamayo. Tamayo and Yushiro, who we did breeze past, are actually pretty important to the story. Tamayo is a very old doctor that was turned into a demon by Muzan. Yushiro is the person she turned into a demon. He's a really funny character. He doesn't like anyone saying anything bad about Tamayo. He's completely obsessed with her. He gets mad that Zenitsu thinks that Nezuko is prettier than Tamayo. He's pretty defensive of her, and she is trying to stop Muzan and also cure Nezuko. And she says to Tanjiro that she thinks she could maybe be able to find a cure if she's able to get blood from an upper rank demon. And that's what sets Tanjiro off on his goal to find an upper rank demon.
Yes. Okay, yeah. So now we're going into the Mugen Train story arc.
Yeah, let's go over the Hashiras real quick because we get introduced to all of them during that trial. So we'll go over all of them because all of them have their good. We've already met Giyu Tomioka, who is the water Hashira that kind of got Tanjiro on this path. Then we do have the flame Hashira, Kyojiro Rengoku. We have the love Hashira, who is a pink-haired girl named Mitsuri Kenroji. Then there is the wind Hashira, Sanami Shinazugawa, whose brother is Gena Shinazugawa, who is one of the men, one of the boys on the mountain with Tanjiro, who has a very unique talent that he can eat demons and kind of take their ability, which makes him kind of part demon for a little bit.
Sense of taste.
And he dual-wield shotguns.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Dual-wield shotguns.
He can't breathe or use a sword, but he's got two shotguns that can eat demons.
That tracks, right? So, like, Tanjiro's got the smell. Inosuke's got the touch because his, like, mist style breathing. He, like, feels things on his skin. Zenitsu hears really well. Genya eats stuff. So, like, all we're missing is what is that? Smell, sight, touch, taste, sound? No.
Smell, sight, touch, sound.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah.
I think sight, you didn't. Sight. Somebody doesn't have super good eyesight, to my knowledge, apart from everybody, pretty much, in this series. But, yeah, Genya eating demons and getting some of their strength is a pretty fucking sweet ability.
Not to get too much into it, but their relationship I love, too, between Sanami and Genya. In the beginning, Sanami isn't a likable character, and at the end of the story, he becomes one of my most liked characters because he just is a savage and actually... He puts off a big facade. He's this big, tough guy that doesn't like his brother, but really he loves his brother and is just trying to protect him to try to not get him killed because this job's so dangerous. And then there's the Stone Hashira.
I want to throw in there that there's a big epic battle at some point where he gets pretty much turned into Swiss cheese and has holes all through his body. And then the next thing you see, he looks like a fucking demon, and then they just never explain it, and then he looks normal again, and then later you find out about his ability to, like, eat demon flesh and turn into a demon and get the healing abilities. And you're like, oh, that makes sense, because I had no fucking clue what was going on with this guy this whole time.
Yeah, at first I thought he was, like, super deep cover. We know that he's evil or something, and then it turned out that he was
I thought maybe he turned into a demon but in the battle and they didn't show it. He just like had his whole body was full of holes. Like he was completely destroyed. And should be dead. And then like a minute later, he's totally fine, but he looks like a demon. So you're like, fuck, did he get turned really suddenly and with no explanation? And then he's just normal again? And you're like, okay. Then they explain.
Like, how did he do
it? Wow, okay, that made sense. But I wish they gave me at least a hint of what was going on. Because it's in the middle of a huge battle in this big arc. So that was my
He's got a pretty sick power, though.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. And again, the shotguns thing totally caught me off guard.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that there were guns in that time era.
Not only that, but the shotgun shoots, like, special bullets, I think.
They're made out of the same metal that the swords are, right?
Yeah. And I want to say it's got that flower, the wisteria flower that, like, demons are like...
It's like poison. Yeah.
Do not like that smell. It's like onions for cats.
Well, isn't it poisonous to them? Like, they can make poisons out of wisteria that kill demons? That's what the butterfly girl does.
The insect one, does it a lot. She's pretty sick, too. Her special sword is rad.
Shinobu Kocho, she is awesome as well. And her, like, underling canal is pretty important and awesome as well. Then there's the flamboyant sound Hashira, Tengen Izui. The mist Hashira, Muichiro Tokito. And last but not least, the stone Heshira, Gyome Himejima, who is a very religious guy who carries around rosary beads and is constantly praying and crying while he does his attacks. Not going to lie, he's probably my least favorite of all of the Heshiras, but he's still very
religious.
Oh, I know. That's the crazy hot take.
He's got like one of the most tragic backstory of the Heshiras.
He does, yeah.
And like Tengen, all right.
Did you know that you probably, I don't know if you know because you haven't read it, the paper, but in the paperbacks, the Tankobons, they get those too, that the kid who ratted him out to the demons was the same kid that trained with Zenitsu, which they reveal in the back, which I don't think is in the actual story. It's just in the extra material, unless it's and I missed it.
Rui, right? Or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rui, yeah.
Yeah. So his story, super tragic. And then Tengen, he comes in, the Sound Ashira comes in right after we just lost Kyojiro, so I was not looking for a new Hashira person to fill. This is like right after a divorce. I don't want a stepdad. Like, get this guy out of here. You know what I mean? So I think he's my least favorite because he came in at the most unfortunate time.
And that's Jack's favorite arc, which I know you told me yesterday is his favorite arc is the Entertainment District, which
story. Undercover is hilarious.
It would get canceled so hard in the United States.
the Mist Hashira takes a long time for it to grow on me.
You're saying if there was an American... Yeah, the Mist Hashira took a long time to grow on me as well.
If an American comic tried to do the same thing that the...
Or a TV show, you think if there was an American action TV show and they put 3 14-year-old boys and dressed them up as female prostitutes...
Girls and sold them as into prostitution so they could find a dude's 3 ninja wives. Like, I think that would get canceled really hard.
Let us not forget Black Brother.
We'll talk more about that, though.
Hold on. I'm going to say, though, now, this isn't that bad. In the Black Butler manga and anime, CL, who's 13, disguises himself as a girl to be sold off to rich men that are trying to buy young girls, and then literally seduces a lord to try to get information from him as the main plot of his story. That would not fly in America either.
No. There's a lot of things that are passable in Japan that are not in the United States.
It's manga. It's okay.
Exactly. But let's wait, because I have a lot of strong opinions and things to say about the Entertainment District story arc. So let's go into the Mugen Train. I think Alex.
All right. So they're headed to the Mugen Train because there's this
Enmu is there.
There's this demon that's controlling this train, and people have gone missing from it. And so they were told to go check it out. And so from the crows. And so they come over to the train and they get on and they see Rengoku.
The Fire Hashira.
Yeah. And he's sitting there going, Umai, 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 Umai.
Tasty, tasty.
Tasty. Delicious in Japanese. Yeah,
it's such an awkward scene in the movie. The movie's fucking amazing if you guys haven't seen it. I know you two have, but.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Yeah.
It's super good.
And then.
Have some things to talk about the movie later on. But go ahead. Yeah. Sorry.
And then from there, Tanjiro sits next to Rengoku and he says he'll try training him or something. Something along those lines.
Yeah, he'll be.
Tanjiro sits and he asks. Yes, well, Tanjiro sits and he asks if he could teach him the what's the dance his father used.
Hinonami Kagura.
Yes, he asks him if he could teach him the Hino. What Micah just said.
Yeah,
Hinonami Kagura. He sat and asked him if he could train him on the Hinonami Kagura, which is the we learn is the dance of the sun gods.
Yeah.
And
the Sun Hashira. Yeah.
Yes, the dance of the Sun Hashira. And he tells him he cannot teach him because he does not know. He does not know that form of breathing or something along those lines. Because at this point, Tanjiro believes that this dance his father used was a fire breathing technique.
Flame breathing, yeah.
Which Tanjiro that he... Well, so then Rengoku... tells Tanjiro that he is willing to train him.
Yeah, and he also lets him know that his father has a lot of books that have books on the sun dances and also flame dances that he might be able to learn if he goes to his homestead, which becomes something that happens later in the... So they go there because there is a low...
We shortly learned that his dad's kind of a fucking douchebag.
Oh, Kao Jiro's dad, yeah, is a complete douchebag. Because, well, he's lost his wife, so he's become an asshole, and he's not really supportive of his son's decisions. The mother was really supportive and kind of helped
mold. And pretty abusive, abusive.
And then the mother really molded Rengoku into the Hashira he is. But,
and they all looked the same. Him, his brother, and his father all looked like strange fire owl people.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they look awesome, but that's really strange.
They also all look like they're European or white.
They all look like they're... they all look like David Bowie from The Labyrinth had a baby with a fire owl creature.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
I can see that.
A really cool thing about Rengoku is he was in some of the youngest Hashira, I believe.
Yeah, he's one of the youngest Hashiras ever, which I think is what the whole prequel is going to be about. Hashira. Flame Hashira, but his mother taught him such ideals that if you're stronger, you have to defend weak people, which kind of, makes him such a strong protector of the boys. In their original quest, they think they're just there to stop Enmu, who is the top lower ranked demon. He does ascend right before this to be the lowest upper ranked demon. And he's basically feeding off people's dreams. He's having these servants he has tie up the people on the train. And then he's basically keeping them asleep by giving them their fantasies. And by doing so, feeding off their energy.
Because I believe he was told, they have this whole M.C. Escher-esque secret hideout. It's very cool. And he was there.
The Infinity Castle.
Yeah. Yes, the Infinity Castle. Sick-ass name, too. I believe that he was told there that if he goes and kills Tanjiro or one of the pillars, I can't exactly remember, but Tanjiro. He was sent there. Yeah, okay, so he was told if he kills Tanjiro that he could become one of the upper moons, and that is why he's going to this train and trying to draw Tanjiro to the train by killing people. It's all a big scheme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is kind of the first hint we get to of Tanjiro being the son of Hashira, is when the boy that's inside Tanjiro's dream basically falls in love with Tanjiro. He's there to basically destroy his soul, and then Tanjiro's soul is so nice. And it has these little sun creatures that kind of lead this boy into inner happiness. That's that he beautiful. Basically is on Tanjiro's side at the end of this, this quest to destroy his soul. Kaiojiro is so strong that he literally can sleep fight like Zenitsu, but he's literally sleep fighting and choking the girl that's trying to destroy his soul because she gets too close to it.
Yeah.
And Zenitsu's dreaming of Nezuko and trying to murder the boy that's in his dream because he's in his fantasy. And then...
And those kids having fun bossing around his two minions who look like chipmunk versions of two guys that he didn't bother to learn their names, Tanjiro and Zenitsu.
Because Tanutsuke, my favorite thing about him, I think, might just be the fact that he believes he's the main character and the most important of anyone else that he meets. Like, he thinks he's number one top dog. Nobody really corrects him on it. They just let him continue to believe that.
He's kind of right.
I think he's awesome.
He's great. Yeah. And I love that he like contorts reality to where he can still believe that he's like the king of everyone and they're all his subordinates by like when people tell him to do something, he's like, okay, I will do that for you, my subordinate, because that's what a strong leader does. Helps his underlings.
he'll basically do anything if he thinks he'll be make himself look strong to by doing it. So you could like convince him like wash the douches and you'll be the strongest man alive. And he's like, yes. Just like,
strong people do this.
him and Tanjiro are constantly the ire of the swordsmiths because Tanjiro is always breaking his swords, and then literally as soon as Inosuke gets a new set of swords, he literally just wedges out edges in them because his swords are pretty much have bandages as handles, and he just ridges out all of these like spikes out of
they're
this
like serrated like saws.
They're all serrated. Yeah,
it would hurt so fucking bad to get hit with one of those. He uses two and just like hacks at people with them.
In real life, I feel like using two swords would just be a complete disadvantage.
Some people used to do it, but they would use smaller swords. They weren't full size katanas. I forget what they're called, but there were specific samurai swords made for dual wielding that some people would use because it's advantageous to be able to.
It would just seem so hard to hold your stance.
And katanas were made as two-handed
weapons.
It's
an entirely different school of discipline. It's like its whole own art form to dual wield, but most people obviously didn't do it because there's huge drawbacks.
So they all wake up and Enmu's weakness is discovered by Tanjiro, that his heart of the train is in the head of the train. And then just when they defeat him and they think they're going to be happy and Tanjiro is going to go train under Rengoku, we got that motherfucking redhead, crazy upper rank demon Akaza showing up. And then shit gets serious, which is maybe one of my favorite battles of the whole series. It's even better if you haven't seen the movie. Like, I would say the manga battle is great, but seeing Akaza's enthusiasm towards Rengoku when they fight, like almost in a friendly manner, wanting Rengoku to become a demon so that they can fight like that constantly, that he's like upset that Rengoku will not yield his humanity and will just, he just wants to make sure no one dies in this train. And then the epic battle occurs, and as Chaz said earlier, we do end up losing Rengoku, but he makes sure not one person dies on the train. Yeah.
That was so devastating. Like, it's insane in such a short period of time. Like, that arc wasn't huge. It was comparatively to, like, all the earlier arcs, but
it's 20 issues. It's two arcs, but it is.
Yeah, so in the time we met Rengoku, it really wasn't that long comparatively to
the overarching story,
but, like, it was devastating to lose him because you just love him so much in the time that you get to know him. Like,
he's just such a lovable character.
And awesome character. And he reminds me more of, like, you see him more as like a sword, but he's actually more of a shield when you get to know him. He's really about defending and protecting people.
Yeah, I would say pretty early in the battle, he knows he's not going to make it through the battle. And
he accepts
it. He's just so determined, to keep Tanjiro safe.
He like doesn't
the train safe.
When he realizes that he's not going to make it, he like doesn't seem to have any hesitation to continue anyway. He never seems to waver or think, oh man, I should get out of here. You know, like, he's just fully committed to protecting the others.
No, and he lands more blows on Akaza than Akaza lands on him, but Akaza's blows are just so much more devastating. And I mean,
he
could regenerate,
Well, he's not human,
Yeah, he was pushing his regeneration to the limit, which was pretty radical of him to state. But yeah, that statement too about him being upset about Kyojiro's reluctance or refusal even to abandon his whole humanity just to pursue the art of getting stronger, because he's like right there. He's so close to perfection when it comes to fighting. If he just studied for like another 100 years, he could be like the toughest man in the whole world. But at what cost, really? His humanity? His decency? Would he just go around killing other people? What happens once you perfect your art? Even if your art is fighting. And then you have another 1,000,000 years of, I don't know, learning to bake bread. Like, what do you do after
that?
Well,
no, I've always had the thought, like, if I was a vampire, like, because people try and achieve immortality.
How do you not get mercilessly bored?
Well, I'm like, people always try and achieve immortality, and I go in like comics and mangas, and I'm like, so why would you want to be immortal? Like, isn't life beautiful because it's like contemporary and like,
that's his whole point, like, is that the beauty of life is that they die, that it's a finite thing.
But then I also think about it, and I'm like, man, if I spent all that time like getting really good at like making music and like learning different instruments and shit, like, I could be such a fucking badass musician.
Like, that's very true.
So I guess there is like that upside of immortality, is if like you have a passion and reason and like things to do, then it wouldn't get quite so boring and terrible. But also,
master that to the
ultimately that, like, I would not, if I was given a choice between immortality or mortality, I would not take it, because I believe life is
beautiful because it's fleeting and we only have like so much time here.
Yeah. And that's very much Kyojiro's sort of point too. In the book anyways.
That in the movie too, he has that line. Yeah.
That it's better to live and that life's worth living because it'll be over. Because it's something that you can only experience
not infinite.
Once. Yeah.
Yeah. We could talk about the movie a little bit. I thought the movie was great. It ended up being the highest grossing film in Japan of all time. And
before that, it was Spirited Away, right?
Yeah, it was Spirited Away for a very long time.
That's incredible that it was able to beat out Spirited Away.
13-year record. And it's now become the highest grossing foreign film ever in the U.S. markets.
Wow.
But there is some controversy, which I did not learn, that Funimation, who kind of owns the company that does the Aniplex is a subsidiary of Funimation, and Funimation's who distributes it to theaters. There's a lot of controversy now with the manga editor and the manga creator, because they pay them a flat rate before the movie made all this money, and the editor only made $3,000 US, and the actual creator of the whole manga and all the story, which is pretty sad, Koyohara Ogitaji, he only made $10,000. Say the movie's made $400 million in Japan and over $100 million in the U.S. and not mentioning other markets, it's closing in on $1 billion.
And he made
$10,000 on.
No, they're not. They're pretty, at all.
No, not at all. That's kind of how Funimation works.
Wow, so. That's really fucked up. I had no clue.
Yeah, there's a whole debate on it now online of how Funimation kind of treats the actual people that create the material for these shows they kind of put out all over the world.
Yeah, I just heard a similar thing that is completely not even comic book related, but that song that I find to be fucking terrible, Old Town Road, was like one of the most profitable songs ever made or some shit. And the dude bought the beat off of like website that sells rap beats, you know, BeatStars or whatever, for like $30. And literally the guy who produced that beat of like one of the highest selling songs of all time made $30 off of it.
I have no idea what this song is. I almost want to look it up on Amazon Music.
Right? Oh, it's like country rap or something terrible.
What?
Yeah, it's like,
oh god.
Something down that old town road, and I ride till I can't no more. But it's like rap song with like Lil Uzi Nas or something on it. Like,
Lil Nas X.
It's horrible, but it was one of the like highest grossing songs of all time, and the dude who produced the beat that was used made $30 off of it, and it was like sampling a Nine Inch Nails song, and Nine Inch Nails didn't get any kickbacks or credit.
Back on the story, this whole arc kind of really inspires Tanjiro. He kind of really appreciates who Kyojiro was to him. He ends up with Kyojiro's hilt because that survived from the sword in this insane battle, and he ends up traveling to Kyojiro's homestead and does retrieve the books and spend some time with Kyojiro's younger brother and also with his douchebag dad, to then return home to all these devastated Hashira when Tengen's about to go on a mission to the entertainment district because his wives are in trouble, and he's trying to take some of the girls to the Butterfly Mansion, which we're just going to let Jack come in now. So he originally is trying to take Kanao and the three other girls in the Butterfly Mansion, and then our group shows
up to stop them stealing little girls. And they're like, no, you can't, that's dangerous. He's like, I don't give a fuck. My three wives are in danger. we don't know that at this point. So instead he decides, okay, I'll take these boys to Jiro, Zenitsu, and Inosuke. Yeah. And so he's cool with that. And then they're sitting there and he's briefing them on the mission. And it ends up that he stopped getting letters from his wives who were infiltrating in the red light district. And so that's, so he's got three shinobi wives and he himself is a shinobi, which for the era, there's like not supposed to be any ninjas left, so everyone's like, what the fuck, this guy's a ninja anyway. So
because it's after the age of ninja and samurai.
They get there and
here's where it starts getting even more weird, is he dresses up all of our prepubescent boys as girls, puts them in makeup, sells them to whorehouses to go undercover to find his wives. And this is why, if it was an American comic book, it would be canceled. Selling little boys into sex slavery. So we're just gonna gloss right over the fact that they never checked them underneath their robes to see that they were not boys. But I'm also gonna though mention the fact that I have misgendered literally every single male in this comic, in this manga, so it does make sense that they would pass as girls.
Yeah, there's, I mean, Inosuke is especially very, very handsome slash beautiful.
Yes, when you take off his mask, he looks like a gorgeous woman.
Yeah, people and just fawn over him.
I thought that Tanjiro was a little dyke lesbian girl for like
Jesus,
almost the whole first season. Come back, I just hear dyke. I'm not going to lie.
Wait, what?
I thought Tanjiro was...
We apologize to all lesbians.
I love lesbians. I love lesbians.
Lesbians
are great. Yeah. So, I was just saying that I thought that Tanjiro was like a total like tomboy, like lesbian girl for like almost the whole first season of the anime.
I love that we are, so this is definitely going to be a big episode because Demon Slayer is huge, and this has quickly become like Blank Check's Dark Knight episode where you're an hour in and you're not even halfway through the Dark Knight movie because it's just insane to talk about this thing. We're an hour and 9 minutes of recording and we're at chapter 91.
And it probably barely explains anything to our listeners. Surprise. It's insanely complex.
Best I think we should do is kind of talk about the story as a whole.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get in, I guess. Okay.
We can kind of edit this. What do you guys think we should do? Group decision.
I think we should just run it and see what happens.
I can't go for much longer.
I can't go for much longer either, Jax.
Well, let's just speed through this and then do like a, let's not get deep into it.
Well, I mean, we could even leave it there. That's where most everybody is going to be coming in is Mugen Train.
The show, because this is where the second season is going to start. Yeah,
it's yeah. Entertainment so we could even say that it's going to continue and people could read it now wherever they choose, because the Tonkabons are almost done coming out.
Yeah, there's two more coming out, yeah.
Should we...
The 24th
volume comes... 22nd volume comes out in like a week or two, yeah.
We quickly finish this arc and maybe talk about any of the other ones?
Yeah, would you talk about maybe like briefly, yeah. Or just like talk about... I would say... For our listeners, this is where you're going to come in the second season, so you have time now to catch up, watch the anime, definitely read the manga. I definitely prefer the manga over the anime, but that's just me. I like reading. If you ask me anything, I'm going to tell you the source material is better because I like to read things. I feel like that's most of us on the show.
I think the action translates better in the anime, but all of the, like, the thought process and storytelling translate better in the manga.
The use of color in the anime really makes the fights like pop. At times that
it's gorgeous.
Yeah, but the manga does a really good job too of like translating that action.
I highly recommend
the characterization is just a little bit better on the manga, I think, which I feel like is most mangas for me, because as you guys have said, the voices can definitely throw me off, dubbed or subbed.
Yeah,
either way you take it, dub or sub. But you got good things coming up. They got the Gunsmith Village, and then they pretty much, you got to just, I will tell the readers and listeners, look forward to a battle that's going to last definitely an entire season of the anime and about 70 chapters of the manga.
It's insane.
It's insane.
It's gone now. It was a really good battle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I guess let's just sum up. What do we want to do? How do we want to briefly gloss over?
Well, you want to go over the entertainment district.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll finish that briefly.
Yeah.
So, okay.
now we're in the entertainment district. The boys have infiltrated these whorehouses in the most ridiculous way possible. They're looking for his ninja wives. Inusuke is the first one to find one of them. And they are... I believe he actually shows up right after this, but she is tied up in a... What is it called? It's a sash? Yeah. Essentially, she's tied up in this sash that's all over the room. And that's their first like hint to find out who the demon is. Jumping past a bunch of plot points, they find out the demon is running one of the whorehouses because one of her workers heard from an elder about a woman just like her that used to run it when they were like kids, and she's like, oh well, how is she immortal and also this crazy psycho that only goes out at night? Oh, she's a demon. You know, whoa. And so they confront her, and that's where shit starts getting crazy. They confront her, and
there's some awesome night scene battles in this with a lot of hopping around buildings. Yes. That is pretty badass. Yeah.
And also, I just want to add, it makes sense because it's the Red Light District arc, but it is very sexualized, this this arc. There's a lot of
there's a
sexy
huge
ninjas and demons.
Demon Slayer is for kids, and I would say no. Even though there's kids in the theater when I saw the movie, because definitely spoiler,
extremely
there's
violent,
gonna be some
very sexualized
characters
stuff
they care about later on that are going to get either eaten or literally chopped in half.
Yes.
So I mean, I think if the kid is too young, it's probably not going to be good for them to see a character they've grown attached to get taken out in brutal ways. Which,
okay, if
this, the manga does not hold back, and the anime will not hold back either, since it's this one-on-one adaptation.
If your kid is like me when I was a kid and would like watch a show like Berserker, then I guess your kid could watch Demon Slayer. But if they're at all a normal kid, no, this is not for them. It appears on the surface in the beginning to kind of be appropriate for kids, but as it progresses, it gets less and less.
I don't know, because I said to Fred when I was still doing Nerds that his kid's 14, and I told him it was too old for. I think he's a little too young for it.
I could see 14 being okay.
Yeah, like, I see 14 to 16 probably being around the age that you'd want.
High school like, age would probably be the appropriate age, I would say. Yeah. You can definitely handle it. I mean, I watched RoboCop when I was 5.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved it.
I watched all the,
really
like,
judge.
Fucking...
Yeah.
Kaboos! Baby Willow!
All kinds of shit.
She watches all the anime all the and
baby
stuff you're watching. She's literally obsessed with the True Blood.
Shit as a little kid.
So I'm holding my daughter. We were talking about True Blood earlier. Mm. Willow is obsessed with the True Blood theme song. She starts screaming when she doesn't hear it, so we'll just start playing her the song again. She absolutely loves I Want to Do Bad Things with You. The song.
What a gem.
It's her favorite song.
Oh.
I love that
song. I've long considered remixing that.
Yeah, it's... Well, our main thing we should say, listeners, there's so many captivating things we've talked about of why this manga drew me back in the world of manga. It's got really strong characters, some of the best battles you'll see in manga or anime, and, you know, lots of death and surprises. Not too many people make it out of this story, which I kind of like.
Very, very dark.
There's a real consequence to everything going on, which kind of draws me to it more.
Especially when you dig into backstories and stuff, there's some really, really heartbreaking stuff that happens. In this
even for the demons.
Not for the faint of heart, like...
The demons, when they die later on in the final battle, a lot of the greatest things is learning about how they became a demon, and most of them, some don't. There are some that are just scum to the core, but there's a lot that, you know, regret how they became that way.
Yeah, it seems like it's a pretty 50-50 mix of the demons having been total fucking scumbags when they were humans, and half of them being people who lived, like, these really tragic lives, and a lot of them didn't even really want to be demons in the first place.
Yeah, what were you going to say, Chaz?
Oh, that's one of the things that had bugged me originally, was like all of these demons are, now that they're going to die, they've really thought about their life. And I thought to myself, like, that's some bunk. But there are a few that earn a little bit more of that sympathy.
They're so cute.
Like, once their heads are chopped off and they're turning to dust, they decide to be good
people. Is this what dying is? I only wanted to live for, like, 3 more days. If I could just stay alive.
The cult leader demon is a scumbag. I mean, that kid was, like, eating people before he was a demon.
Complete
sociopath. Yeah.
I was glad. There's a few that I was like, you're going to get it, and I'm going to love every second of it.
The guy who was pretending to be blind to rob and murder blind people.
Yeah. They gave him almost a turnaround with Akaza. I mean, I really wanted him to get his comeuppance, and then getting his comeuppance, it'll do better, I think, in anime translation, because, like I said, the movie did a really good job of his, like, attitude, whereas I just thought he was a terrifying presence in the manga, and in the anime, he's very, like, jovial when he's fighting Rengoku.
Yeah.
Which will translate well to those, you know, parts where you kind of got to have compassion for this dude that's dying, even though you hate him to his absolute core.
Because he took away our boy.
So I guess
Rengoku!
Best way to sum up from where we're leaving off is there's a lot of really epic, super long battles with tons of badass characters that are all working towards an end goal that, and along the way, there are lots of leaves being turned over, and you learn there's lots of twists and there's lots of new developments. And you see the characters really grow and shine and sometimes get brutally murdered, and
usually and after growing and shining.
Exactly. Yeah, then they gotta grow and shine and then die.
Yeah.
I mean, their death would carry no weight otherwise, right? But
right.
Yeah, and so I think it's really cool seeing all the growth. It's really cool seeing Sujiro learn about, like, his ancestral reincarnation stuff having to do with the dance of the sun Hashira, which is, like, the original breathing style. I thought that was really cool.
And he's reincarnated from his brother, Kokoshibo. Not to give too much away about who he is, but there's a battle with him in the end that's literally fucking maybe the best battle in the whole series. It's 4 Hashira against an upper ring demon, and it's fucking fantastic. You guys have that to look forward to.
Against the upper rank demon, I would say.
The upper rank demon.
Next to Muzan, the baddest dude.
So at this point, if we don't want to go on for another, like, 4 hours, should we just do our overall thoughts and opinions and then just talk about what's coming up for the rest of the season and then
definitely
do an outro?
Yeah.
Cool. So, Alex, what are your overall thoughts and opinions on this series?
Overall, in the anime, the animation was, like, amazing, and the fights were really amazing. That's the one thing that it lacks a little bit in the manga, but it still really carries the really cool fights in the manga.
They're more cerebral in the manga than, like, visceral like they are in the anime.
Yeah, like, during on season 1, when they were fighting the spider lady, like, when he sliced the head and was, like, going in for the cut, that was, like, really satisfying.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was, like, all, like, definitely built up, and he was, like, in the air 60
frames per
second.
Well, I think just seeing the sword move.
That picture is in my kitchen, manga, Alex. I look at it when I cook.
Fuck yeah. So I think what translates really well in the anime, but not the manga, is really just seeing the movement of the swords. Because there'll be shots where you see, like, it looks like a time-lapse photo or something. Yeah. Or, like, you can see, like, where the sword's going and where the characters are, like, bouncing around and stuff all in, like, a still frame. But it still can be kind of hard to wrap your head around compared to watching the actual character moving and the sword moving, even though it's supposed to happen at such a fast rate. So, anyway, any other opinions about the manga?
No.
Okay. What about you guys? What about Jazz?
I super dig this book, man. And it's easy to see after reading it all. I mean, even just reading the beginning, why this has become as big a sensation as it is. whether it's the movie, the show, the manga, all of it taking off, really. But it's a terrific shonen story through and through. As far as the hero meeting his goals and hitting his resistances, his roadblocks, overcoming them through compassion and friendship, like it's just really fun and inspiring.
It's endless, which is nice.
Yeah. Yes, it's not One Piece. I would definitely, exactly. On Chaz's thoughts, say it is definitely like the ideal shonen. It's definitely really inspiring. It helps, even though it's very violent, and you know, we'll be talking about our favorite violent scene.
Extremely
when
violent.
This person's taken out. I think for me, the most appealing thing is kind of all the characters' growth and journey, and it really helps. I think there's a lot of good messages in the violence and under the violence of teaching, you know, people how to act right and do the right thing in situations where, you know, you might be scared and kind of flee instead of fleeing, to kind of stand your ground and kind of look out for each other as human beings against, you know, crazy demons that want to eat us and feed off of us and are basically terrorizing the land. It's got a lot of great mythology, which I love finding out more about the characters, especially with the reincarnation storyline, is a lot of the things that kept me going and I couldn't put this down. I mean, for a long time, I didn't want to read it on the Viz app. I was trying to go physical, and then I cracked. Chaz was there being like, It's so good, and I couldn't
hold it anymore. I needed somebody to talk to about it.
Yeah, and I read it all.
It's incredible how the world building and complexities and deep lore that they can get out of this story in like such a short amount of time, too. Like, you don't feel like you've been reading it for that long and there's already a world with like all this complexity and rules and like established guidelines and all this lore of all these different characters and how they interconnect.
I was exactly where you were right now, Jack, in the printed editions and the Takamon when I decided to read it on Viz, and I read like the rest of the story in 2 days. I mean, I just couldn't stop. It's just so good.
I'm definitely going to hop off of this and probably read some more. I'm going to binge through the rest of it.
It's just so captivating. I'm pretty sure anyone who picks up the manga, you're going to read it till it's over. Once again, throughout this whole manga marathon, we're going to tell you how good that $2 it costs to get that Viz app.
It's worth it.
You can read. Yeah, it's super worth it.
Buy the hard copy, though, if you really want to support manga. I mean, I guess you're really not supporting the writer that way.
I'm buying the hard copies, too. I have a subscription on Amazon. I'm getting them, too. But, I mean, it's even crazier than read the Tankobon after the Viz app, because that Infinity Battle takes like 12 or 13 volumes, which is pretty easy to get through it on the Viz app.
Here's what I'm suggesting to all of our listeners. Instead of going and paying to see the movie, watch it illegally online and donate money to the writer. Just kidding. I'm not endorsing people illegally watching things online.
Well, no. If you do buy the printed editions, you will help Gotaji get more money.
I was speaking about the movie, but...
Well, I mean, if you buy the printed copies, he's going to get more money probably in the end than he's making all of his money right now.
I really want to buy the hard copies. I'll probably, when I have more money, to throw it out and buy them at some point.
You mentioned the end of One Piece. Apparently there was one person that's not the writer that, or like anywhere wrapped up in it, that knew the ending. And it was a kid who really wanted to know the ending, who had cancer and was going to die. So he went to the children's hospital and told the kid before he died the whole ending of One Piece.
That's crazy.
Killed the kid so that he couldn't try to spoil it to anybody else.
He's like, now that you know.
Oda has been writing
the ending. I gotta for pull both the plug. Of you.
Oda has been writing One Piece every week since 1998, except last year he took a 2-week break because he got a cold and everyone thought he got COVID, but he didn't.
Okay,
he
just I'm calling 2 weeks bullshit off. Though. I bet he went to that hospital and told the kid. He was like, "Since you're about to die, I'll tell you the truth. There's never going to be a fucking end. I want more money."
I mean, he's pretty rich. Now, officially last year, One Piece has sold more copies than the Bible. And now it's sold 30 to 40,000 copies more than the Bible. So, I mean, when alien societies examine us, they're definitely going to think we worship some god named Luffy and his merry band of pirates.
Monkey D. Luffy.
Monkey D. Luffy. I am a One Piece fan.
Yeah, I don't know. I could never get into One Piece because, well, there's a few reasons.
It's daunting.
But the one I'll say right now is just that it feels like it's just an endless abyss of story that actually goes nowhere and has no point.
There are stories that have points, but you just have to get through the thousands, hundreds of chapters of filler.
Somewhere, I bet there's a list that's just like,
There is. There's definitely a list.
If you read this 8% of the story, you'll get every single piece of information that's at all relevant.
I mean, they anyway, this is in one piece. Right, they do meet like a lot of people that do affect the story a lot. What I've seen of One Piece.
Sorry for talking shit on One Piece without actually reading it and barely watching any
of the episodes. I'm a One Piece fan. It's daunting though of the manga and anime. So that's our first manga episode. I definitely think we're going to take a different approach going on because all these mangas are pretty long.
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe if we just talk about our opinions and what we like about the story, it might translate a little bit better because this really did become our Sweaty Dark Knight episode because there's so much to talk about with all these books.
Anime is going to be coming out for a very long time. So I feel like...
No, it'll be 3 seasons. So
will
two
it?
More seasons. Yeah. There's the next season and then there's the third season. Hopefully, what I think what they got to do is have this next season's going to be the Red Light District and the Gunsmith Village. And then they're going to do, I would assume, the first half of Infinity Castle or maybe a little bit more as a season and then end it with the movie. I think it's probably what their goal is, especially with all the money they've made. Yeah. I'm sure Kai O'Hara will get a better deal once the second movie is in.
Yeah, there's no way he's going to take that.
He's not going to let them fuck him again.
Anyway, I feel like as the show is coming out, like more of the show, we probably could end up doing like another episode or two, even just talking about like the middle and end of this story, since we barely even touched like the middle of the story and none of the end.
Yeah, and definitely if another movie comes out, we could talk about that, kind of wrap up what happens and how we like the translation.
So we actually don't really have that much manga this month, considering our manga May hashtag, because we have a lot of interviews coming up, right?
Yeah. So next week, we are getting Noisy again. We are almost at our goal of getting every member of White Noise on the show. We are having an evening with Alex Paknadel, which I'm overwhelmed about. We're going to get to talk about his new book coming out, Immortal Hulk, Time of Monsters. We're going to talk about Giga. We're going to talk about Red Fork. And I'm definitely going to talk with him about Turncoat and Arcadia too, and some of his other stories he's wrote. I really dig his story that's going on quarterly in Razor Blades, the James Tynion produced horror magazine. He has a really cool sci-fi story set in an apartment building in London that I absolutely love. So I'm definitely going to bring that up as well. And we have a 2 TKO coming at you. We are going to talk about Jalia with Junie Ba, the French creator. It's a YA book released by TKO. And then we're going to talk the next week with Sebastian Gerner about his YA TKO book, Scales and Scoundrels. And then we'll be back on to our manga books, which won't be until basically June, which will take us into July. We're going to have more surprises coming for you. Chainsaw Man's going to have our favorite French madman come back on, Kevin Rotatelli, which he's ecstatic about. And I can't wait to party with that guy. I can't wait for him to talk about the man that is a chainsaw. And then
our previous episode with him still might be my favorite episode or one of the most fun to record. That was,
And then we're going to wrap this run up with a different kind of episode after we do manga. We're going to talk about the John Wick series because I haven't seen it. These guys talk about it a lot. Everyone talks about it a lot. So I'm going into John Wick fresh. I don't know.
I know
the superficial stuff about John Wick, but I really don't know what else besides that. He's really mad to kill his dog. And then he just keeps killing. Yeah.
That's most of the story right there. That's probably like 90% of the story right there.
Well, that's good to know. As always, you guys, you can find me on Twitter at PoetAir33. You can find the show at Outside The with a 0. And on there, we do have our Discord linked. We have had some people jump on it. Please jump on our Discord. We want to get that thing popping more and have all sorts of fun conversations about the Multiple Man movies that could have been with James Franco and, you know, other things that we edited out of this episode. Maybe we talk about more in the Discord because it's crazy. The Full Metal Alchemist, the first anime creator, made that. That's the craziest thing I've heard all day. Where can they find you guys?
Briefly mention that on the Full Metal episode.
Anyway,
Chaz, where do we find you?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter as well at Chaz Simons.
And you can find me on Twitter at @sin_aesthetics. Or if you like bass music, I got some new dubstep coming out on my SoundCloud, Sin Aesthetic. What about you, Michael?
I already did mine.
Oh, yeah, you already did yours.
Yeah.
Alex, you have
he gets it out early.
I don't want to link anything.
No worries, Alex. Thank you so much for coming on. If you want to come on for some of the other manga episodes, please just let Jack know. More than welcome.
I think he said he wants to come on for Full Metal.
Yeah, I'll come on. Oh.
Sorry about my fan. It's being
you're all good.
Bad again. Yeah. Hit it with some more.
I can't wait for everyone to continue on this journey with us at the podcast as we grow. It's been almost a year. It's been great. I want to do a quick shout out to my former co-host from Nerds because I know he was going through a tough time. Fred Reads Comics. I mean, Fred really kind of pushed me into this life, into the comics podcast life, and I will always appreciate him for that. So I want to give love to him and his family and support them. You know, I definitely know they've been going through a hard time. Fred's an awesome person. If you know Fred online, definitely always you could talk about comics with him whenever. And I want to say, but I think he's definitely blown away by all the talent we got on our crazy little show. I shocked him quite early on by asking Sean Lewis to come on with Nerds. And he said I was like a new baseball player that was trying to hit like Babe Ruth. And luckily it's worked. And I got to say this to Fred with all love in my heart. If someone hands you a baseball bat, you might as well swing for the fences. Chess?
Turn the page and wash your hands.
Have a great night, everyone.